Welcome to Lead Pods, the official leadership podcast from USMB for pastors and church leaders, where our goal is to increase our impact together.
Hello, my friends, and welcome to another episode of the USMB Lead Pods. My name is Matt Ehrsman, and I'll be your host today for a really great episode. So I believe it is officially this week that marks the one-year anniversary of when our lives were turned upside down with all kinds of crazy daily updates on the effects of the coronavirus, COVID-19. If you're anything like me, you probably remember this week a year ago, where especially if you work at a church, every day you were trying to pay attention to what new rules were coming out with regulations and restrictions and bans, and I'm trying to scramble to figure out what that meant for your life or what it meant for your kids at school or your job. And I just remember the chaos that those days brought, and it's, on one hand, it's kind of hard to believe it's already been a year, and on the other hand, it seems like this is just what life has been like for so long, it's hard to remember what life was like before. It's just crazy. So today, as we are kind of on this one-year anniversary, today my guest is Dr. Jules Glanzer, the president over at Tabor College, and COVID has affected him more than probably most of you listening. He had COVID, and he got a pretty bad case of it that kept him in the hospital for about a month, and he had some pretty extreme experiences with that, and so he was gracious enough to be our guest today to share with us what his experience was like. He had a pretty meaningful vision while he was in the hospital that was really meaningful to him, that kind of shifted his priorities in life a little bit, and it's just a really interesting story. So, you know, especially as COVID, as the world kind of opens back up, it's just kind of a good reminder that COVID is very, very real, and it has drastically affected a lot of people's lives. And luckily, President Glanzer came out on the other side, and he's doing really well, but it's still just really good to hear from him. So you'll hear throughout the episode, if you didn't know, I went to Sterling College, which is Tabor's main rival, and, you know, I couldn't just completely let that go. We had to play around a little bit, so Jules and I kind of share some jabs back and forth as friendly rivals in the KCAC conference here in Kansas. So bear with me as I kind of give him some warrior jabs. But anyway, again, I think it's a really great episode. I think you're going to enjoy hearing from it. So we will take a quick break and then get right to my conversation with Tabor's president, Dr. Jules Glanzer.
Tabor College is a proud sponsor of USMB Lead Podcasts. Starting this summer, Tabor is launching a Master of Education program in neuroscience and trauma. The degree is designed to help leaders such as teachers and youth workers to understand the trauma of the children and students that they are working with. The best part about the program is that it is being offered 100% online. For more information, go to tabor.edu/adult/med.
All right, my friends. Well, today we are joined by Dr. President Jules Glanzer, the president of Tabor College. He has been the president of our Tabor for, I think, 14 years, and he's wrapping up his last year as the official president before he helps with some of the transition stuff. So, Jules, thank you so much for spending some time with us today. Grateful for your time.
It's my pleasure to be here.
So, Jules, you and I were just talking beforehand, and I, of course, went to the really great, great, great college known as Sterling College. You, of course, run Tabor College. For people outside of the Kansas bubble, we're kind of the main rivals of the KCAC. And so I am often outnumbered in MB circles. I'm often the lone non-Tabor person. And so, you know, Jules, you're my guest today. I know you're recovering from COVID, so I promise to be kind to you, but I have to at least just acknowledge the elephant in the room that we are from rival universities here.
Well, I'll forgive you for your bad choice of schools, but I'll compliment you for your good choice of denominations.
Fair enough. Fair enough.
Sterling's a good school.
And Tabor is okay. Tabor's okay.
Just keep sending us your students and we'll be satisfied.
Fair enough. Fair enough.
Well, President, being a college president is real easy. There's just two things you need: more students and more money.
That's like most jobs, I think, is, yeah, more clients, more money. Well, Dr. Glanzer, I know a lot of people know you, but for someone listening today who maybe doesn't know you or your story, can you just give us a quick bio of who you are, your role at Tabor, and anything else you'd like to share with us?
I'm in my 14th year and final year at Tabor College, serving as their president. When they find a new president, I will be retiring, and then looking forward to what is next after that. Prior to this, I was the dean of the seminary at George Fox University for 6.5 years. And before that, I served as a pastor in Houston, Texas, with the Evangelical Covenant Church, and also as a church planner with them, and then with the Mennonite Brethren prior to that. And I was in Ulysses, Kansas for 4 years as a pastor there in the Mennonite Brethren Church in Ulysses. Prior to that, 1 year as kind of an internship at Lincoln Glen Mennonite Brethren Church, and Mennonite Brethren Biblical Seminary before that, and Tabor College before that. You just got 50 years of history.
You are MBE through and through, aren't you? That's great.
I grew up in South Dakota in a Crimmer Mennonite Brethren Church.
Okay.
And the church is made up of Hutterites. And so I'm a full-blooded Hutterite. And I still remember when I became president of Tabor, and the first board meeting we had, someone from South Dakota walked into the cafeteria, walked up to the board people that were sitting there and said, "Well, so you finally got a Hooter to take care of this place."
Nice.
So there's some history there.
Nice. That's great. Well, Dr. Glanzer, I know kind of our main topic for today is you fairly recently just got out of the hospital. You had quite the stint fighting COVID-19. And so, I mean, first of all, I'm just glad to see that you're home and doing well. I know it's been quite the journey for you. So we're going to spend most of our time today just talking about your journey. I want to hear how everything kind of came to be, how you're feeling today, and maybe just a couple lessons that we can all learn now that you're on this side of it. So why don't you just walk us through? So how did all this start for you? When did you start to feel symptoms, and what has this journey been like for you?
Well, first of all, the journey isn't over. Mm-hmm. They told me when I got out of the hospital that for 3 weeks I should expect to be on oxygen and just kind of get back to some kind of normality. That would be followed by 3 months of healing and recovery that would be fairly intense. Mm-hmm. I'm 1 month into those 3 months right now. Okay. So I have another couple months of that. And then there was a 6 month period where once that happened, at the 3 month juncture, they're going to be running a number of tests to see exactly what all has transpired in the healing process. And then another 3 months in addition to that. And then I will know what is permanent,
okay.
What I will have to continue to live with, and what I will, there's been healing for it. So I'm in the midst of that battle yet. And you in the COVID world, you measure progress by the week.
Okay.
And you have good days and you have bad days. I've had a string of good days this week. And so as I think about what was it like last week at this time, seen some noticeable improvements. I'm really thankful that my lungs are healing. My strength and my muscle atrophy has not come back yet. And being in a hospital for 31 days, the atrophy, it's 3% a day, to give you an example. So there's just a lot of muscle that has to be built back, and stamina, and things like that. So it's just time is my friend, rest is my friend, and managing relationships and energy levels and appointments and schedules and all that is just very important. So I'm in the midst of it's a long journey and it's a battle. I have to tell you, I am thankful that I'm here. And if you read the Christian Leader story, you said, and I'll be happy to share that story here if you want me to. The battle started with, so I was going to bed, I noticed a cough. I had done everything that I thought should be done. We have strict protocol on Tabor's campus. And I had followed that in terms of not being in groups of people, basically being social distance to the degree that you can, and also wearing a mask when it was appropriate to wear one. I just realized that the next day I had a person come, a consultant come to see me. And before he came, we went and tested in our COVID lab. He tested positive and I tested negative. But I could tell that something was wrong. I called my doctor and he said, "Well, why don't you come in? We'll start giving you some drugs just for preventative." And then that lasted and I had some really good days, tested again and tested positive the next time. Day 10.
Real quick, let me ask you real quick. So when did this start? Like what time of year was this?
In November.
November.
It was November 17, I think it was when I had the first symptom. And then they had started, because I was a high risk situation, I only have one kidney and a pacemaker. So I was considered high risk. And they said, if you get it, you're toast. My doctor told me that way back in March already, you know. And so we really were careful and tried to keep away from it. But it somewhere, I do not know where I was exposed to it. On day 10, which was the day after Thanksgiving, my oxygen wasn't holding. And the oximeter was just dropping me lower and lower into the 80s. And at about 8 o'clock that night, the doctor said, I think you need to go get some supplemental oxygen. Let's just be for preventative, but you're not holding. We need to do something.
You just had a cough and then it just kind of got harder and harder to breathe. Is that
because everyone has different symptoms? Kind of normal symptoms. And then I felt pretty good.
Okay.
But day 10, the oxygen level was not holding.
Okay.
That little gadget, the oximeter that you put in your finger and it tells you what the level is. It should be in the 90s. And mine was all day long was just going lower and lower and lower. So I literally thought I was going in for a couple of whiffs of oxygen for a day or two and I'd come home.
Yep.
And to show that I really was thinking that, when I got out of the car, I simply reached over the console of the car and kissed my wife goodbye.
Yeah.
And then walked around. I mean, no hugs, no embrace. It was just going to be a day. I'm going to come out the next day and it'll be fine. And when I got in there, that is when the doctor, they started hooking me up and stuff and taking all their measurements. And that's when the doctor just told me, here's what you're facing. And went from all the different levels of care all the way to a ventilator.
Wow.
And they said, this is what we're going to be watching for. And she just told me, I don't know if I'm going to be able to keep you off the ventilator from what I'm seeing right now. I really begged her not to, but you know, that's what wouldn't be my choice. The Lord did spare me that though.
That's good.
I never went on the ventilator, but it was that first night that I had the experience that is written about in the Christian Leader. I was laying there. They had switched me to the BiPAP, which was forcing oxygen in. Suddenly I found myself standing in front of this huge, huge, hundreds feet high cross, big square railroad tie, even bigger than that kind of construction. And I was just this little man in front of this huge big cross. And I knew that there was this sense that if I stepped into the cross, that I would be on the other side. I had this sweeping sense of forgiveness and of assurance of salvation. That was kind of an interesting, like, hey, this is okay, and a sense of serenity. And I sensed that behind me was everything that I ever knew about the world. And in front of me was this cross, and just stood there. And I grabbed my phone and I texted my wife. There was this sense that I was going to, my life was over here on earth. And I texted my wife and I said, the world behind me, the cross in front of me, always has been, and don't know when it will, you know, when it will be. If I step into this cross, I will see Jesus. And then I'll ask him if I can wait at the gate for you and for the family. And I sent the text. I didn't want to bother her, but just felt like I needed to do that. And then I stood there, and there were a lot of different things that kind of a time of reflection. I realized this was the gate to heaven, that all of life ends at the cross, that what Jesus did on the cross gives the whole world meaning. Had some affirmative things about this. The cross needs to be the central thing for Tabor and how important it is to be telling others about the cross. And there was just this flood of kind of reflective thoughts about the importance of the cross. And that it meant all of life ended at the cross. Everyone would bow at the cross. I mean, it was the gate to heaven. And suddenly there was no choice. Suddenly there was this just strong urge, like, fight, Jules, fight. So I started fighting. And the number that comes to my mind is 4 hours, but I don't know how true that is, if it was four or more or less. But as I think back, that's what comes to my mind. And for the next 4 hours, every breath I took was a breath to stay alive. And they were deep breath. They were pushing the oxygen in at 100% level almost into my, you know, lungs. And it was just a continual fight. And then the next morning, they moved me up to ICU, and I was there for 17 days and then another 31, or a total 31. So whatever was left of that, or 14, it was in ICU, and then another 17. And I think it was in the hospital. And it was a life-changing experience for me, I can tell you that. You know, I was in the process of rethinking how I was going to live the next part of my life, you know, a pending retirement, preparing a college for a new leader, relocating to a new place. And so all of that was a part of, and this experience really helped me reset my life. And it slowed me down and prepared me for retirement, I think, in some ways. But I think as I think of how my heart was reset, I find myself wanting to just rebuild my life around kind of a series of five words: contentment, gratitude, simplicity, smallness, and focused. Those are kind of, that's how I'm rebuilding and resetting my life at this point, is around those. I just don't have the desire to be in front of large groups of people anymore. That was what my life was. And so I'm actually changing, adding a phrase to my mission statement. My mission statement is to, I desire to honor and trust God with my life by being a person of influence, impacting and inspiring with relevance and integrity the lives of those who will influence others. And I want to add one person at a time. And that's where my life is heading right now. I want to be able to make decisions based on what's best for the person instead of the group. As a college president, I always have to keep what's best for the college. And sometimes that means that individuals get hurt. And I'm not interested in that anymore. I want to do what's best for the individual. It was a very intense personal experience with that. So that's kind of a summary of that experience and how that has impacted me in a pretty significant way. The whole idea of simplicity and smallness, that's taken on new meaning for me.
I don't know you very well, Jules. We were talking before we started recording. Do you have dreams and visions? Like, is that something that you've experienced before? Was this a totally new experience for you? You hear about the stories about people who, they had dreams where they died and they saw Jesus and then they came back. Like that, you kind of hear those kinds of stories every once in a while. What's been your experience?
This is new to me. I am a visionary leader. And so I live in the future and kind of see, always I'm looking for what I see and imagine the future. This was different. This was I don't know what to call it. I call it a vision of the cross. And I don't expect anybody else to have that kind of a thing. I don't like it when people have an experience and now everybody else is supposed to have the same thing. This was a highly individual thing. I have to tell you, I don't know why he decided to let me to stay. Because when I asked our doctor, how close was I to death? He said, you don't want to know.
Yeah. Wow.
And from my perspective, I just felt like I was one step away from seeing Jesus. I have a lot of friends that have died from COVID way back in March already. Yeah. And I do not understand why some people God chooses to keep and some not. I do not understand the sovereignty of God, but as I look at my life, he has extended my life. And so I want to serve him in humility and in quietness. Every morning, now this is the day the Lord has made. I will rejoice and be glad in it. Give thanks to the Lord for his good. His love endures forever. And he's given me another however many days to live. You know, but it's Psalm 139 says our days are all numbered. Well, my number hasn't come up yet, and I don't know why.
Yeah,
because there are so many that it has with COVID, and why he chose that. Except I'm going to continue to serve him in whatever way I can. The other verse in Acts where it says that, and David lived for his purpose and then was buried with his fathers. I guess my purpose isn't over yet.
Yeah.
And so that's the only answers I have, and I don't know if they're good answers. And I think another outcome for me is because of the limitations that this has put on my body now, I think I find myself thinking that I will be serving more out of being than out of doing. Mm-hmm. I won't be able to serve food in a homeless shelter because my body at this point can't handle it.
Yeah.
But I'll have to figure out some way that I can serve from a perspective of being rather than doing. And that's another change that's happened to me here.
Mm-hmm. That's an incredible story. I want to come back to that because I want to kind of finish our time today with some kind of practical takeaways so we can all learn from you. But just from kind of a curiosity standpoint, what was it like in the hospital? Like we hear kind of a range of stories. Like what was it really chaotic and people running around? Or just walk us through what was your actual time in the hospital like?
Nurses are heroes. Mm-hmm. They work incredibly hard.
Yes.
They are understaffed. And in the ICU portion, they are kind of moving around like ping pong balls. Wherever there is something and there's so much going on, wherever there is something, they have to go and rush to it. I also found that many of them are people of faith.
Yeah.
And they see themselves as creating the environment for God to heal. I experienced that in a lot of places. One of the things that did quite often is I just asked if I could pray for them and thank God for them because, man, they're putting their lives on the line.
Yeah.
That kind of an experience watching them. I tried to do as much for myself as I could and so that they didn't have to, you know, always be doing because there were others that were in much worse shape than I was.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. They are truly heroes.
Yeah, I agree 100%. Yeah. You mentioned you walk in the hospital, you think you're going to be there for a day or two, possibly. But then, so we have that part and then we have the really amazing story about the cross. Like, was there a part where your health kind of turned and you started to really wrestle with, okay, like maybe I may not make it out of here. Like, did you have some of those thoughts? Like what kind of happened in the middle there?
Whenever I had a bad day,
mm-hmm.
That was always front and center that, well, now the time is coming.
Yeah,
and now the purpose is completed. That was there on a regular basis. There were a couple of situations where my lungs weren't working at all, and they were turning the oxygen up instead of down. And there were on two different occasions I would text out, tell people to pray. And we had thousands of people praying literally around the world praying. And I remember one particular time it was just really bad. And they were kind of at seeming like they didn't know what to do next. And all of a sudden at 8:25, it snapped.
Wow.
I mean, just like that, there was a turn. And I text back to where I said, the effective prayer of a righteous man availeth much. Somebody just really prayed and got hurt. Who's that? Yeah. And on two occasions, there was that where it was heading in the wrong direction and boom, it just churned. And I looked at the clock and I could tell somebody had gotten through to God.
Yeah.
That's how it felt anyway.
Mm-hmm.
And so there were two occasions where that happened. One in ICU and one after ICU.
You've already mentioned this, but I understand you've had some feelings like this, and I've had situations like this in my life where you kind of wrestle with why me, right? Like a lot, like you mentioned earlier, a lot of people pray for sick people all the time and things don't turn out that way. And I know, clearly God just has more in store for you to do, but can you talk a little bit about those kind of questions and wrestlings that you were feeling? I mean, it's a miracle that you're still here. And like you said, it's probably because of people lifting you up in prayer, but that is just a tricky theological thing to wrestle with.
I don't feel guilt about it.
Mm-hmm.
For me, it is all about the sovereignty of God.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And I just admit, I do not understand the sovereignty of God. I've always felt like all of us are here to participate with what God is doing in the world. I've never liked using the phrase, God uses me or God uses you. I've always felt like, no, we are participating with him in his mission in the world. And what he is doing, I want to align my life with him and my activity with him. And so when I think of the sovereignty of God, my aligning with his mission and being a part of what he's doing in the world is part of his plan and part of what he's doing. I see all of Tabor that way. You know, every student that comes to Tabor, from my perspective, is a gift that God has given us to shape. And what we are doing is we are carrying out His work in that person's life. And so we create an environment by which that can happen, and at the same time provide them and equip them for a vocation that when they leave will go into the world and make the world more the way God intended it to be.
Yeah.
And that is His mission. Mm-hmm. And I don't even know if we always can identify what that mission is. I think we know in general when we read Exodus 5 and 6, you know, to bring deliverance, to form community, to help people know God and to give a better life. I mean, I think that is the general purpose and mission of God in the world. God's Design by Elmer Martins, you know, he lays that out in a really positive way. And so I think we're participating with that. How the sovereignty of God fits into that, I just don't think we'll know until we get there.
Yeah.
And then we'll understand why God does what He does.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not God and I don't want to be, and He is and I want to serve Him.
Yep. One more kind of practical question. You've kind of hinted at this already, but like, how are you doing now? I know you mentioned you still got some months of recovery ahead of you. Are you able to kind of breathe and function relatively normal? Or how do you feel today?
Yeah. I've been off oxygen for over 2 weeks now, and my mind and my body, my mind and my spirit are willing and my body is not.
Okay.
Ironically, the underlying conditions were not affected by COVID. Mm. It was just my lungs and then the atrophy from being in the hospital for 31 days. Mm-hmm. And so my legs, and that's just a matter of exercising and bringing that back. Mm-hmm. The lungs, I'd say, are probably about 65-70% capacity right now.
Okay.
In that neighborhood. And lungs heal themselves, but they do it slowly.
Okay.
And if you push them, they remind you that they're in charge.
Okay. So, well, I'm so glad that you're recovering so well. That's great.
Thank you. You know, it's the prayers of the people. Mm-hmm. It's all the medical professionals and what they've done. And Dr. Lowen from First MB is my personal physician, and he has just been amazing. And all the medical and therapeutic drugs that they pour into, and from steroids to remdesivir and to the plasma that they put in, that was another piece of what I experienced through that. And then, but at the end, it's God who heals.
Yeah, that's right. So I'm curious if you have any kind of leadership lessons that you've learned through this, because part of one of my least favorite things about COVID is that it's kind of unfortunately become a political issue for a lot of people. And I really don't like that. And again, you and I were talking before we started recording that it's different when we know someone like you. We can put a name, a face, and a story to someone we care about who's really struggling. And so I think, if it's just a headline, it's a little bit easier for us just to kind of brush things aside or think there's some master conspiracy happening. What's been your personal journey with that side of things? And for leaders listening, what kind of advice or encouragement would you share for leaders kind of figuring out how to walk through these crazy times that we're in?
That's really a good question. And let me answer it from a societal point of view.
Okay.
To start with. I don't like what I see in society right now. And what I don't like is, first of all, the hypocrisy and lack of integrity. There is so much hypocrisy and so much lack of integrity with what people are saying. And then you add to that, we live in a world of extremes. We're polarized, but the polarization is around extremes. So I think the first lesson on leadership in this is good leadership understands paradox. And paradox is bringing both ends together in some way.
Mm-hmm.
So we need to be living more in a both and world than an either or world. That's very difficult for someone like me with my personality to do. But if there's a leadership lesson here, it's the lesson of paradox, is how can we bring the ends together? And also to be just genuinely live out integrity instead of hypocrisy. The masks thing for me is just it's all about hypocrisy and a lack of integrity. If you're going to wear a mask, wear a good one. And now even the CDC has said wear two.
Yeah.
Why did they say wear two? Because one isn't working. Yeah. So both sides were right. And so the lesson from that is practice integrity. Mm-hmm. So paradox and integrity are two. A third one is I'm really getting tired of people not taking responsibility for their lives or taking responsibility even for anything that they do. Mm-hmm. And expecting me to take care of them. Mm-hmm. Now, as a leader, it's my responsibility to do that. And I understand that they've been put under my care. But that if something goes wrong, I should have done something else to help mm-hmm. them out. Mm-hmm. And I think a third leadership lesson is take responsibility. And even when it's wrong, take responsibility. Yeah. I do not know where I got COVID, but I have to take responsibility that I put myself in a place, someplace where I got it. Mm-hmm. And I wasn't smart enough or didn't realize enough that, and it could have been just a split second. I didn't have a mask on, but I was wearing masks every time I left my office.
Yeah.
I avoided being with people, but so I have to take, I can't blame anybody else for giving me that.
Right.
And so the paradox lesson, the living with integrity and the taking responsibility, those would be the leadership ones. Mm-hmm. I also learned another thing. This is another story, if you don't mind.
Sure, go for it.
I don't know if you've ever heard of the Stockdale Paradox.
I'm not sure if you have.
This was Ross Perot's running mate who was, he was a prisoner of war in Vietnam.
Okay.
And he made the case that prisoners that set a date by which they hoped to get out, and then that date came and went, didn't make it.
Oh, interesting. Okay.
And prisoners that didn't set the date, but just said, when it happens, it's going to happen, and continue to struggle and endure, those were the ones that made it.
Interesting.
And he called that the Stockdale Paradox. I experienced that when I was, because we spent Christmas in the hospital.
Yeah.
And the week or so before, our goal was to get home. Mm-hmm. Before Christmas, you know, I was playing that song, I'll Be Home for Christmas, mm-hmm. you know, and then all of a sudden I realized that is a killer because instead of wanting to be home by Christmas, I wanted to go home when I was ready to go home.
Yep.
And the day before Christmas, I was not yet ready to go home. Mm-hmm. Plus it was a weekend. And so if something would have gone wrong, I would have not had the care that I needed outside of the hospital.
Sure.
And home health wasn't going to be coming by at that, you know, on Christmas Day and things like that.
Yep.
And I think that's another leadership, that whole Stockdale paradox, as they call it. Mm-hmm. I just really experienced that over the Christmas season, that it's okay to set dates of when, but don't let that get in the way.
Yeah.
Have the purpose in mind, be ready. Yep. And it was another one of those experiences that I had.
Yeah, no, that's really good. Those are all very good takeaways for all of us. So as we begin to wrap up here, Jules, obviously your new perspective, it's inspiring, it's encouraging, it's interesting. I loved reading your Christian Leader article. It was just really insightful. So your takeaways, your five words that you're kind of centering around, like those are, that's a good way for anyone to live, right? And unfortunately for a lot of people, it takes some kind of crisis to have kind of this reconciliation or this realization that some things might need to change. For anyone listening who hasn't had, you know, a battle with COVID or crazy life altering situation, I mean, what can we do to have a better, the perspective that you have now? Do you have any advice of how we can kind of all live that way? Because I think that's the right way to live, is to, like the words that you're talking about, you know, simplicity and valuing individuals and being content and grateful for each day. We would all benefit from living that way. Do you have any advice for us as we begin to kind of close out here?
I think you have to be called to live that kind of a life. Hmm. I don't know if everyone should live that way.
Really? Okay.
I would have a failed presidency if I would have lived that way for the last 13 years, because there I had to be very actively involved in things. Mm-hmm. I was content and gratitude was always there. But being a college president is not simple. I mean, there you can make things as simple as possible, but it's a very complex world when you have 24 different stakeholder groups that you have to take care of. Mm-hmm. And I think if I would have lived this way all 13 years, I'd have been considered a lazy college president. Mm. Or maybe I'm missing something here, but I think all of us are called to certain kinds of lifestyles.
Okay.
There were times I have had to make decisions on what's best for the college, and I know that I hurt people in the process. Yeah. I hate that. I mean, it grieves me when I have to do that. Now in retirement, I'm not responsible for an organization, so I can go back to how it was when I was pastoring. The yeah. individual was important. It is, I think it's a good way to live,
mm-hmm.
but I don't know if it is needed for everybody. It's kind of like the sovereignty of God. I think all of us need to learn how to listen to the voice of one, learn how to see the world the way God sees it, learn from that, then do what he's called us to do, and always do it in love. I think that's the model that I think has a lot of different options for how people live that out. Listen, see, learn, do, and love. Those words is how I want to live my life. Yeah. And the situation dictates then how that is. That's how I understand it.
And maybe it's seasonal too. Right? I mean, maybe, you know, you couldn't have this simplicity when you're president, but maybe, you know, some of that might be seasonal too. So yeah, that's really good.
Oh, without question. Seasonal or even situational, as you work with youth, and I know you do more than, but I know you're a part of kind of the youth culture at First MB. Just think if you told them the most important thing for them was to be content.
Right.
That's a little bit different than when you're 68 years old.
Yeah, yeah. The word has different meaning.
Yeah, sure. Yeah. Yeah, it does.
Well, Jules, again, I just want to say I'm so glad that you're doing well and recovering. So thank you again for, especially with low oxygen and low lungs, for taking some time to speak with us for this long and to share your story with us. It is really encouraging and inspiring. So I'm really grateful.
It's been my pleasure to be a part of this. Thank you very much, Matt.
And you know, it pains me just a little bit, but you know, I might like Tabor just a little bit more, just a little bit. I'm still proud of my Sterling College, but Tabor might have etched up just a little bit after today. So congratulations.
One step at a time.
Have you visited the USMB website lately? At www.usmb.org, you'll find information about upcoming events, a complete list of MB churches across the U.S., information about lead coaching, lead one, lead cohorts, and lead pods, Mennonite Brethren history, and a resource library with recommended books, articles, and videos, including recordings of all USMB-sponsored webinars. Visit www.usmb.org for your connection to everything MB.
Well, once again, many thanks to Jules Glanzer for spending some time with us today. And I was just really encouraged to hear his story. And, you know, for those of us who haven't had COVID, or at least to the extent that he did, it was just really interesting for me to hear about his experience. So I hope you enjoyed that as well. And once again, we're, of course, very glad that he is recovering and doing well. So, Dr. Glanzer, if you're listening, keep resting up, and we'll look forward to following along with your recovery journey. Dr. Glanzer did mention that he had an article in the most recent issue of Christian Leader where he talked about that cross vision in a little bit more detail. So if you didn't check that out, I do encourage you to check out that article in the most recent issue. If you didn't get a print copy, it's also on the website. So if you go to the Christian Leader website and look for it, I'm sure you'll find it. And you know, hey, I don't know when you're listening to this. Where I live, it's about spring break time. So many of you might be getting some time off this next couple weeks. And so I hope you enjoy that time with families, or just rest, or hopefully spending some time outside. As always, I'm very grateful for you listening today, so thank you for spending some time with us. And again, we'd love your help to spread the word, so if you could share this episode around, or shoot a link to somebody, or even just tell some of your friends about it, we would love your help to help spread the word so more and more people can check out our show. All right, well, hey, have a great rest of your week. We'll look forward to seeing you again in 2 weeks for the next episode. And in the meantime, have a great week, and you know I had to do this. Go Sterling.
Thanks for listening to Lead Pods. Make sure you don't miss an episode by subscribing to our show wherever you're listening today. Learn more by visiting usmb.org. And be sure to follow us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. We'll see you next time as we learn more practical tools to increase our impact together.